It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're going to talk about the latest blue rumors, some Xbox Next rumors as well. It's all ahead. Windows Weekly, next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 311, recorded May 9th, 2013. Push me, pull you. Windows Weekly is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Windows. And by Directory Wizards. If you need a directory synchronization tool, Directory Wizards has the solution, Unity Sync. It offers a truly unified GAL. You can create a messaging forest, link seamlessly with HR databases, or build a backup forest to aid in disaster recovery. Visit derwiz.com/windows for an extended evaluation you can download, configure, and put into action today. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover all your Microsoft needs in great detail. Today, we're doing the show for a very special audience of one. What's your name, sir? Dave Smith is here from, where are you from, sir? He lives in Utah, works in L.A., he's in the film industry, and he's on the last 1,000 miles of a 3,000-mile road trip.
He's using a Nokia product.
Are you using a Nokia product, sir? He's using an iPhone 5.
I want him out of there now, Leo.
You must leave the studio now. He has a Lumia 900 charging in the car, so
that's better.
This is his burner phone he's brought into the show today, and he's the president of a company called Loco Mats. They make mats for the movie industry.
We protect people from tripping.
Hey, we need mats. Oh my God, David, I'm going to have him. This is a big problem. We have people tripping all the time here. We need Loco Mats. When he says, that's when I'm here. This is the best sales pitch ever.
I'll give them to you.
He says he'll give them to us. We'll just have to have Loco Mats branding on all of our shows from now on. No big deal. When John gets back with my coffee, I'm going to introduce you, David. Also here, kind of, you know, an afterthought, but also here, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Paul is the head honcho. Do you have any tripping problems over there at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com?
Any what problems?
Tripping.
You should see my office.
Yeah,
it looks
see?
Like
you need Loco Mats.
Sanford & Sons.
Yeah. I'm coming, Elizabeth! He says that all the time.
You big dummy.
You big dummy. Oh, yeah, there he is. Paul, meet David. Mats, all over the place. We're going to cover up those wires. Anyway, they're having a conversation now. Mary Jo Foley is also here from allaboutmicrosoft.com. We're wheeling and dealing today on Windows Weekly. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
This has rapidly become the Windows Blue show, isn't it?
It
is. We are feeling a little blue.
Is it because Windows Blue version 8.1, which comes out in September, is so hotly awaited, so mightily anticipated?
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
Is it the Windows 7 to Windows 8, Windows Vista? That was a very confusing sentence. Can you parse that?
That's an interesting comparison. Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Interesting. Well,
I still think I had the best description of Blue, though, a long, long time ago.
What was that?
When I described it as an apology. You know?
We're sorry. What can
They're
we
just
do to
up
make it
a little bucket?
So we do have an. So they finally said the word blue a couple of weeks ago, and now they're actually talking about it.
Now they can't stop saying it.
blue. So what's the latest?
Yeah. So this week we got to hear from the two people who manage the Windows division. We got to hear from Tammy Reller, who's CFO, and then Julie Larson Green, who's the head of engineering, and they both talked separately in different venues about what they're willing to say at this point about Blue. So what they did tell us is mostly what we already had heard. They said that it's going to be out in time for holiday 2013. They also acknowledge there's going to be a public preview of it in June around the time of the Microsoft Build conference.
That's next month.
Yes, wow. At the end of the month.
Wow. And
they basically, without quite going so far as to saying this, they strongly hinted the start button is coming back.
Very strongly.
Yeah, start, but again, start button, not
also
start
menu. Very clearly stated that the start menu is not coming back.
Right.
Right, they did say
if
that.
You parse what they said.
That's interesting. They want to make sure people understood that when we say start button, we just mean a little button in the lower left that opens the Metro
I haven't published this yet, but I've written an article about that topic. And I think the point I wanted to make about it was that a lot of people are not going to be happy hearing that they're only going halfway. You know, that the start button's coming back, but not the start menu. I actually think the start button is the more important of the two, because even in Windows 7, the programming launching capabilities of the start menu were somewhat removed, if you will, because of the taskbar. And that's the way that desktop users typically should be launching apps anyway. And I actually think that the start screen that they have in Windows 8 is in many ways a better...
But the taskbar isn't very big. I mean, you can't put all the things I use on the taskbar.
Honestly, using Windows 8, I can tell you because I don't actually use the start screen very often.
Yeah.
I do have everything I need on the taskbar. So, there are, obviously in Windows 7, there's other things going on in the start menu, and they've moved some of those UIs to different places that I think actually, by and large, are more logical. But I don't really think the start menu is the big deal, although you can rest assured that there will be a second generation of complaining when these plans are made public.
What is the motivation? What's going on with the start button? Is this something that the business is asking for, manufacturers are wanting? What is it?
Yeah, I think it's more, Julie Larson Green did say, We did a ton of testing, but she didn't say it exactly like this, but I guess we didn't test enough for people using it with the mouse and the keyboard. And they want the comfort level of seeing this thing in the corner that they recognize as a start button.
Yeah, because if you're just using the keyboard, then it's not such a big deal because you have a Windows key, you press it, that's your start button.
Right.
But if you're using a mouse,
users don't do that, right?
Where do you put the mouse to get that going?
Yeah. And she said, there is the start button in the corner, which you get if you hover over it. But a lot of users don't get that. And they just want to make it very clear, I think. So she kept saying comfort level.
Yeah, that's a good point. They do have a start button if you move the mouse to the lower left-hand corner.
Yeah.
Yep.
Huh. And it's really a better start button.
I actually think that's enough, personally. But
yeah, that looks like the start screen. So,
on the other hand, there is kind of a weird little gap there in Windows 8 in the taskbar right at the beginning of it. You know, it's not big enough for the button, but it's a weird gap.
Right.
It looks like when a kid has a missing tooth in their mouth. You know, it's kind of a strange look to it.
Yep.
So I don't know if that's supposed to be some kind of visual cue or whatever, but. Clearly, it was a little too subtle for most people.
If you right-click on that start button that pops up when you move your mouse to the lower left, you actually get a menu.
Yep.
It's not a complete menu.
Well, these things do not please people.
I've been using it for 6 months. I didn't even know it was there.
Oh, that's interesting, right? Yeah. It's interesting. That complaint, I think, is a very valid complaint that some of the new UIs in Windows 8, including the charms, which I think Jeremy Reller suggested might be changing as well.
The charms is probably the single biggest problem because you really need to use the charms.
Hidden UIs are tough. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where settings are for individual apps. That's where search is. You have to know about that.
Wait until they just put it on the screen all the time and block part of the desktop.
Oh, that'd be worse.
So, you don't think they're going to do that, do you?
No, I don't think they'll do that. But they're going to have to do something to make it more obvious that thing is there. I don't know if that means, something in the corner or, I don't know how they do it. But, UI that you bump into by mistake is not necessarily
good. Not good. And certainly nobody wants the charms bar permanently there. It's an interesting question. I mean, the charms bar is actually probably a good idea. In the sense that it is a consistent spot where every program's settings and search lie.
Right.
And that solves a problem of inconsistent UIs from program to program. Mm-hmm. And so it's a good idea, I think, from a kind of a strict user interface point of view. Yeah. But having it not be obvious may be a little bit more of an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, for mouse user especially, it's kind of a pain, right?
Yeah. You have to move your mouse to the lower right hand corner. Yeah. The side isn't even it, right? No, you have to go down. Side and right and down.
Yeah.
Is this not obvious to everybody?
No, because you know what? You don't normally get or up. You could do it up.
Yeah.
You don't normally get your mouse to that corner. That corner used to be where you'd go for the screensaver.
Yeah. You know, this problem would be alleviated if you cheap bastards would all just upgrade to new tablets.
Yeah, then I'd know.
Exactly. You
know? Then I'd just know.
Yep.
But, you know, both Tammy and Julie Larson Green this week in separate interviews, that something they said really stuck with me. They kept emphasizing this, and I'm sure this is something they're going to say publicly when this comes to pass, but they kept saying, we're being principled and not stubborn about what we're going to do. Right. And they said that over
and
over.
That's a good way to slice the baby in half.
It kind of is. I mean, it's slicing the baby.
We're principled but not stubborn.
So, by the way, I think that's the right language to use. My only issue with it is that it took so long to be said. You know?
Right. People but they were stubborn before. They were stubborn. They were principled and stubborn before.
Right. Yeah, it's almost like something changed over there and now the stubborn part is gone.
Maybe.
Now they're just principled.
Yeah. Principled but flexible.
Yeah. Right.
They call it situational ethics where I come from.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good. Well, that's good.
I think that was good. Yeah, good news. We couldn't get them to get any more detailed about exactly when Blue is going to be out because I asked Tammy Reller this when I met with her. They keep saying holiday 2013. I still hear from my sources RTM is August of this year. It'll be interesting to see. You know, I said to her, is holiday 2013 worst case scenario? And she just said, that's all we're saying, holiday 2013.
You know what that is, though? That's a continuation of a thing that I think that they were semi-smart in doing, which is not to overpromise. You know, in other words, if they were to say right now, this is what we expect to do, and it slipped for some reason, you know, they'd be right back to stage one. So I think that's all that is. I don't think they're trying to be cagey. I think they're just trying to be realistic.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, that's what we know now we didn't know last week.
It's awesome. Awesome. So excited. I couldn't be more excited. I'm up and down.
I could be more excited, but it's good. It's good.
Yeah. And they talked about smaller tablets are coming. We knew that, right? And they said we made adjustments so that those will be coming to market. Julie Larson Green kind of hinted in her interview that we might hear about new surfaces in a couple weeks, I think.
Yes. She definitely did. Definitely did. She also, you know, when the interviewer kept saying smaller tablets, she would, you know, she has a kind of a strange habit of repeating back things that the guy says, but she did not. That was one of the ones she didn't repeat. Every time that guy said small tablet, she said small devices.
Oh, you know? Interesting. She liked the word devices better. Huh?
Yeah. And I don't know if that just means, you know, hybrid devices or if she's just leaving it open for a wider range of smaller devices. But it was interesting how she never actually said tablets in the context of those smaller tablets. I thought that was kind of interesting language use.
Yeah.
Let's parse.
Oh, and they did. Tammy, also, one other thing that's interesting. They're going to talk about pricing and packaging and the SKUs in a couple of weeks, which is really early, actually, if you think about it.
Yep.
So that's also a new twist. Like, hey, we're actually going to tell you what to expect.
Yeah. So since we love conspiracy theories so much, let's opine on what that could mean, because the feeling, of course, is that Blue should be free. And so why would we be talking about Blue pricing when this is something that should be given away like a service pack? And one of the theories is that, of course, Blue should be free for existing Windows 8 users. But on the other hand, of course, as well, they're going to be selling it on, you know, with new PCs and at retail and so forth. But I wonder, and again, this is, or I should be clear, this is based on nothing other than pure hope and speculation that maybe this fall, this holiday season, they'll do what they did last year with the initial release of Windows 8 and make it available for a temporary time for a very cheap amount of money and then jumpstart sales again. You know, have a second season where they they make just the software available very inexpensively. So I kind of hope that that is why they made a point of saying that pricing is one of the things they'll be announcing.
God, I really hope it doesn't cost anything.
Yeah. I mean, just because they are saying the word pricing, it doesn't mean it has to be a dollar amount, right? Like free can be the price. And so many people, when they heard them say the word pricing, were just like, that means it's going to cost something. It doesn't have to mean that, right?
Good point.
Everything they say is so, bandied about. I mean, it's all, and that's the trouble when you're not very clear.
If you don't give people information, then they're going to
interpret.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did notice, though, I was looking back at some coverage, and I saw a piece that Walt Mossberg wrote in the Journal, like right around the beginning of May, where he just dropped in it that, the next version Blue is going to be free and free to existing users. And so I asked Microsoft about that. I'm like, so is it? Did you tell them that? And they wouldn't comment. So make of that what you will, too.
I jokingly said to Mary Jo earlier today, I think, that if Blue's not free, I'm going to buy it back.
Wait a minute, though. Maybe what they're saying with Blue, that would be a joke. Maybe they're saying with Blue, 8.1 is not going to be free, but the upgrade will be free to existing users.
That's what I'm thinking.
There'll be a price if you want 8.1. So Blue, they're going to say Windows. What they're saying is there's going to be a new version of Windows, and it's not a free version, but an upgrade should be free for anybody who bought first version, the beta.
We get into weird territory here. I used to always say this about antivirus in Windows. And when Microsoft came out with OneCare years and years ago and charged people,
right?
I thought it was wrong for Microsoft to charge for something that they were responsible for, in the first place. And so if you think about Windows 8 as something that is not complete and something they very clearly have to fix, is the first time any of us, I'm sure, can think of where they released a new version of Windows a year later. How could you possibly charge people for that?
Yeah.
You're implicitly admitting that the thing that you released last year is not good.
You could charge for it if it were more than just a start button and a boot to desktop. You could charge for it if there's something significant in there. WinFS.
We're all very curious if that's going to be the case. I mean, so far what we've seen in leak builds is not dramatic. Although, to be fair, Julie Larson-Green was very open about that. I mean, she alluded to some, I don't know what she was talking about, but she seemed to think that there were press reports that this was going to be some kind of a major update. And I don't recall ever seeing anyone claim that. But
so she debunked that and said, no, it's not a major update.
Yeah.
Well, then they definitely can't charge for it.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not, from what we've seen, it's not. That doesn't mean there couldn't be stuff in there we don't know about.
Right.
Of course.
Right. And from what we've seen in the leaks too, there are a lot of changes under the covers, right? Like at the API level, there's a lot of changes. So, how do you say that's major or minor?
There's benefit to an end user that they've done something to the API.
I
right.
That's, except that, that is except, so true.
Yeah, the end user is not going to say, oh, yay, years ago, improved API.
Apple would do something like, Apple completely redid the 3D subsystem. Yeah.
You'll love the new core data in OS
X. It's like, that's a major new feature. And it's like, it really isn't. And not until lots of stuff takes advantage of it.
They still could do what Apple does and say 300 new features in this, right?
They
and
it's better.
Like all APIs, right?
Right. 300 new APIs.
Yeah.
Developers hate us, but you're going to love it.
Well, in the same vein that the Metro environment in general needs a lot of updating, I mean, I think you could make the argument that the WinRT API is also a 1.0 effort, clearly are in need of likewise many improvements and updates and so forth. And so, again, you can't charge for this stuff. It's so crazy. I mean, you fragment the market for one thing, because there are people who are never going to pay that fee, even if it's $10.
Right.
And you can't have two versions of Windows 8 out in the market. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, that's an excellent point. They have to push this out and force people to.
Yeah.
It should be. That's why it's really a service pack.
Which, by the way, is one of the other really curious things that Julie Larson-Green said, was that this update would be delivered via the Windows Store, not Windows Update, that you would install it just like any other app.
Yeah, that's how Apple does it now.
But that's not how Microsoft does it. I mean, not to date. So. That's a very big difference if it's true. I mean, I wondered when I heard that if she didn't mean simply that, like they have desktop applications that are listed in the store that you click on it and it goes to a web page or whatever. But I'm going to be very curious to see if that thing actually installs through the store.
Yeah.
You know, like an app.
Mm-hmm. So, Microsoft, I'm not sure why this is in the blue section. You're trying to hide this from me. Microsoft's not giving up on third-party retailers.
Oh, yeah. No. I should talk about that.
Is this from Julie as well, or Tammy?
This
or?
Was from Tammy when I talked to her. Because, you know, besides all the things we're talking about with the UI and what needs to be done, you know, another thing that needs to be done with Windows 8 and Blue is Microsoft really needs to have a better story at retail, right? Like, you go into Best Buy, you go into Staples, and you're really not getting a very good impression of the product. So I asked Tammy that when I met with her, and she talked about a few things that they're going to do around this holiday season to make Staples and Best Buy better showcase places for Windows. So she talked about, you know, we're going to highlight the different experiences. Like, there's going to be a tablet section. There's going to be an all-in-one section. There's going to be a PC section. And we're really going to segment out what the best experience is for users on those different platforms, which would be very good and helpful, I think. Because if you're going in with the mentality, I want to buy a laptop, versus going in with the mentality of, I want to buy a tablet, you need to see different things. And she also said, right now, the way they incent retail salespeople is they're not doing it completely around touch. So the change that's going to come around holiday is they're going to make their incentives to retail salespeople 100% about touch. So they're going to really, really push them to sell you a touch device.
So if they sell me a laptop, they won't get as big a cut as if they sell me.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. If it doesn't have touch, yeah.
Boy, that's so that, in a way, that's telling. Maybe this is not news to you guys, but to a layman outsider, that sounds like Microsoft is highly committed to touch.
Yes.
That they don't see from everything I'm hearing now is, they really don't see the mouse and keyboard use as really being the way people will be using Windows down the road.
I mean, some
is that
people
new?
Will. Some people will. No, I mean, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it's new, but it's very explicit.
It's like, explicit.
It's
we're
like,
going to reward
hey guys,
you for selling touch. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Julie Larson-Green mentioned that in her talk, and this notion that was the future of computing, kind of reiterating.
Yeah, you know, but there's one thing to say that's the future of computing. It's another thing to say it's our future now.
Yeah. Well, you know, they devices and services company. I mean, I don't expect to see a desktop computer with a Microsoft logo on it. You know, they're going to be making these kind of devices and touch devices specifically. You're not going to see like a non-touch surface device of any kind.
There's still a lot of OEMs making non-touch devices.
In fact, today,
stop?
No, and Acer said this today, right? Like, they there was an article in the Wall Street Journal just today with the president of Acer saying, we are happy to hear Microsoft's listening to us, and we don't think the world is going to be all touch. And
this guy clearly has mental problems.
This guy keeps saying things.
He is, seriously, he is all over the map. Like, if he was my mother, I'd start calling him.
He's like Eric Schmidt, where he just says stuff. He just says stuff to see what happens.
I don't know. I have to agree with him. I want there to be choice. I don't want to have only touch devices. Sorry, I don't.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, but if they're rewarding salespeople,
I know,
for selling touch in a way that they don't reward them for selling a Lenovo non-touch notebook.
Yeah.
What is that saying?
Well, but
and if you're Lenovo, how do you feel about it?
I use an Ultrabook. You know, Mary Jo uses an Ultrabook. I mean, if those machines had touch capabilities on the screen, but were otherwise identical, that doesn't detract from the experience at all. I mean, you could use that thing exactly as you're using it. Nothing would change. I mean, so part of the problem with touch is just that the screens require, you know, are more expensive, and they're not that much more expensive. That's what kind of kills me. I mean, the margins on these things must be really small for that to make a difference. But I think part of the deal is just making touch screens less prohibitive for hardware makers to add to those machines, because just the adding of a touch screen shouldn't destroy a classic PC experience. There's no reason you can't just keep using your mouse and your keyboard.
Yeah. I mean, one of the deterrents has been the cost, right? Like, every time you want to look at something that's a touch laptop, it's substantially more than a non-touch. And so that's been one reason that some people have said, I don't want that to be the only choice, you know?
Right. I think it's literally double. You know, the average cost of a notebook is, you know, $400 or whatever. The average cost of a Wow. A touch-based notebook is probably more like $800.
Yeah, I paid, $1,300 for the S7.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, there are other reasons, but... Hey, by the way, I just came in the mail the prototype of the new Microsoft glasses. Microsoft.
Right. Nice.
Yeah. They're calling them iWindows. And, wow. People keep trying, but, you know, it's all about design. That's what I say. So, I'm sorry. I think that's very interesting that they're going to incent salespeople to sell touch. To me, that seems, if I'm an OEM, I think that the writing's on the wall.
Why doesn't Microsoft have a store within a store like Samsung does? I read that Samsung was going to have store within a store at Best Buy.
Right.
And I went to the local Best Buy, and there's one in there already. Like, it took no time at all. It just happened.
Well, you know, it's marketing money. This is marketing money. And Samsung has so much marketing money because apparently in their corporate structure, the percentage allocated to marketing is directly tied to the percentage of sales.
Well, here's a newsflash from Microsoft. Most people get Windows with a new computer, and most people in this country get a new computer in a store, not on Amazon.com or whatever.
Yeah, you want to sell computers.
I don't know. Maybe making that a good experience would be a pretty good deal because, you know, sometimes you go in thinking you're going to buy a PC, and if you actually pay attention to what Best Buy looks like, I could picture people being very turned off to a PC simply because of the quality of the presentation compared to, say, a tablet.
But that's why Apple built retail. I presume it's why Microsoft built retail. Maybe they're just saying, look, we don't care about these stores. Well, they're not. They're saying we do care, right? Yeah. But maybe they really think that are they rolling out more Microsoft stores?
Yeah, they are. They're continuing to do that, and more of them are these smaller kiosk specialty stores. In fact, they're adding 5 of them in May and June.
Yeah, so why put a store within a store when you can have one in the middle of the mall next to the guy selling cell phone cases?
You could have a guy driving around in a Microsoft truck, and he opens up the back.
Yeah, he pulls up to somebody's house and says, I'll give you $12 for that
old
laptop.
You got a slightly used Surface here you might be interested in.
If you could tell me the difference between Bing and this ice cream cone. I think maybe Microsoft's pretending that they care about third-party retailers when their real strategy is an Apple-style strategy.
They know where the bread is buttered and so forth. I mean, obviously, commercial sales are a much bigger deal than consumer sales. But as far as consumer sales are concerned, I mean, retail is still the king, and they would be foolish to ignore that.
Yeah, Apple did that because Windows sales dominated these stores. And they had to get out of that environment. But that, you know, that's not bad for Microsoft. That's good for Microsoft. But they should make them look nicer. It was.
Not anymore.
Yeah, they should make
now
them.
It's all, Best Buy is all, you know, smartphones and tablets.
Right.
You know, and then there's that kind
that's
of getaway.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Windows computers.
Yeah. So maybe the issue, maybe the competition isn't against other computers. It's just against other devices.
Yeah. Well, as it arguably is in the real world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. How about, let's see, you talked about pricing on Blue.
Yeah.
Tell you, we're going to do a commercial break before our commercial break. How about that?
Okay.
I don't, we've got some YouTube videos for you to look at. But before we do
that. Those are incredible.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun with that.
If you are listening to this, not watching it, you got to go watch this part of it because you're never going to understand what's going on here.
we didn't know what to do yesterday on Security Now. We played a couple of commercials that we did the two Nimoys, which were wonderful, the Audi commercial.
Yep.
And it's mostly music. And I narrated it. And Steve said, oh, no, people don't narrate it. But I said, but 90% of your audience is listening and all they're hearing is music.
Right.
So it's challenging.
So these, at least as I recall, these commercials are much like that. Plus the audio is in Japanese. So even if
I'm not going to describe it for you. Wait a minute. YouTube pulled Security Now off because of an Audi So YouTube pulled us off because of the Audi commercial. You would think Audi would want people to play that commercial.
It's inconceivable. That anyone would play it on their show and not do anything but rave about how great it was.
No, I don't think they're trying to control. Who cares? I don't care. This is why YouTube is not a major part of our overall strategy for success. Clueless idiots. Really, it's sad. I'll tell you what's a strategy, part of my strategy for success. It's ShareFile.com. ShareFile is the way I send files nowadays. In business, actually, because I have ShareFile, I do it for anybody. When I want to share pictures, I use ShareFile. And it's so much easier. If you're still using email and email attachments, you know that's a bad idea. It's insecure. It's dangerous. It's not a good way to go. ShareFile is not email. It's you send a link, a secure link with the email. Now, if you're using Outlook, their Outlook plugin makes it look just like you're sending it via email. Kind of handles it for you. But ShareFile makes the flow of information so much sweeter, so much easier, because you're controlling it. And I think in some industries, you don't have any choice. An email attachment's not secure. If the files are too big, they'll bounce back. If you're in medicine, for instance, you know, you've got HIPAA regulations require that you protect the confidentiality of your patient records. You can't just attach them to an email. I don't care if you put a notice in here that says, if you receive this by accident, delete it immediately. That's ridiculous. ShareFile from Citrix seamlessly integrates into your daily routine, no matter where you are, not just from your desktop, but from any mobile device as well. So when you use ShareFile, files of almost any size are sent as secure links. Notifications are sent to you when the files are opened. I'm always running in the background my ShareFile sync tool on Windows and Mac. That's a really great way to keep folders synchronized kind of automatically. And that keeps them always up to date. So I have folders on the desktop. But the nice thing is when I share files via ShareFile, you don't have to log in or anything. You get a very nice link. You click that link, you get a very nice display with my company logo on it, branded. You can easily set up shared folders for collaboration with clients and coworkers as well. It's very nice. You can have temporary folders. It's very flexible. That's basically it. There's so much on here. I want you to try it for 30 days so you get an idea. If you are sending file attachments or you're using some other application or sharing files with people in some way other than this, this is the way to try it. Go to ShareFile.com, and where it says radio listeners up at the top of the page, there's a little link. This is the one we want you to click, the green microphone. Click that link and use our offer code Windows. Then pick your industry, and you don't have to, but I suggest you do, because ShareFile can be customized for so many industries. It's worth taking a look at that. Financial, insurance, legal, medical, nonprofit, music, software, tech services, and more. ShareFile.com. Use the offer code Windows. Try it free for 30 days. I think you will really love it. And we thank ShareFile for supporting Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about Windows. We're talking about advertising. Three ads. These are for Windows 8, and they're all from Japan.
They are.
Supposedly.
All right, let's look at one. This is Ping Pong. Now, it is in Japanese, so you're just going to have to imagine, I guess, what you're seeing here. I won't go full screen so that YouTube won't pull us down. We have this theory that if we don't go full screen, the content ID can't flag it. This is Windows 8 Training Camp Piano. Oh, yeah, Paul, this is not really going to be good for the audio.
Yeah, it really makes no sense.
It's this guy playing the piano, obviously, in a tuxedo. And then another guy, apparently playing ping pong against him. He's got a ping pong paddle attached to his butt. Wait a minute, they're both playing the piano and ping pong. That's not possible.
It's the magic of software, Leo.
They're playing ping pong with their butts and playing the piano at the same time. And what does that have to do with Windows 8? You can work and play at the same time.
Yeah.
Man, it makes me want to run out and buy it.
Yeah.
Windows lets you play piano out of your butt.
I said last night, if you thought the Seinfeld commercials for Vista that were kind
weird.
Of confusing.
Yep. But, you know, it may be that Japan has a different, you know.
They do.
It's a little different. Okay, now this is also training camp. Now we have some young people, young women. Let's see
what
they're up to.
Oh, training camp, okay.
Yeah, makeup.
So
beautiful woman is teaching some unmade up young women how to make up.
Basically, they have to apply makeup, as much makeup as they can in 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
HF 10-6.
Okay.
So you can see they kind of race to put the, you know, they put
yeah. She's going fast. She's doing a good job. She's got a little rouge.
Quick, you know.
She looks good. Lipstick. She looks good. Big improvement.
She looks
kind of. And then this girl, she's doing that.
Same sort of thing. So the first two are very similar.
Yeah,
very similar.
Not really good. Meanwhile, because she's using Windows 8, she's painted something, and now she's plants her face on it, and she's ready to go. Yeah, it's like funny, but
she like slams her face into the thing and comes up.
And the slogan: "Beautiful and fast Windows 8."
That's
well, it gets your
one.
Attention.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
these are probably not bad ads. You ready for the last one?
Making assumptions about the language, but yes.
Yeah. This is called watermelon. Don't know what that means. They're all pointing their pointer fingers. I guess they're going to chop this watermelon in half with a finger. Carving a watermelon with a very long fingernail. Very impressive. This guy sticks his finger in the watermelon, carves out the inside. And nice job. Now he's got juice. Very nice. Watermelon juice. A little finger juice added. That's great. Meanwhile, the young guy is just drawing on it with his fingers, paddling on it. What the? Oh my god, he carved a swan. I think he wins. The power of touch. Get it?
Kind of.
Do you know if these are? By the way, that's only been viewed 439 times. So you made a little discovery.
They put them. No, last night they put them on the Windows YouTube channel. Then they suddenly made them private. I don't think they intended to do that. And
so people have stolen them.
People started watching them. Yeah, and then now they're back. I think some of them are back to being public again on YouTube.
But you know, we can't judge, can we?
I know.
It's a different culture.
Judge.
It might not. Those may not work. You know, they're certainly stimulating conversation.
I
actually think the makeup one is kind of great.
Yeah.
I think it's fun.
I'm a fan of the watermelon one. It's like late Gallagher.
Yes.
Yes. All right, we got some numbers. Now, where do these numbers, Mr. Supersite, come from? Are these from Microsoft?
From Microsoft, yeah.
Really? They actually released... This is after their quarterly
report. Not all
report.
In one place. These are all from different little...
Uh-oh, Angry Luke says I should recant my information. What did I say wrong, Angry Luke? He's angry, so he's just angry. he's just angry.
He meant to repent, not recant.
Repent. Come on, Angry Luke. What did I get wrong? Come on, Angry Luke. Tell me. They're Chinese, not Japanese. Those are Chinese, not Japanese.
Okay.
Are they?
I don't know. I'm just reading what it says on the notes. So really, Angry Luke, you should blame Paul Thurrott.
I did say they were Japanese.
I
did too.
No idea.
That's what I read everywhere too.
Well, I could tell you pretty quickly if I look at them, because you know I studied Chinese.
Ah,
yeah, it's Chinese.
Is it okay?
Well, okay,
it's Chinese.
Okay.
Simple
Good
enough.
To know. There
now,
we go.
Actually, that's Tony. Did you? Are they Chinese?
Yeah.
Tony says they're Chinese. He's Chinese.
Okay. Well,
the female ones are Korean. So he thinks the makeup one is a Korean one, which would actually make sense.
Interesting.
And that the other two, the watermelon and you didn't see the watermelon one? Let's Tony can actually translate for us. Not that that will make it any more sensible. Tony, what is he saying? That's Japanese. isn't it? That's Japanese with ICQ. That's definitely not Chinese. Now he's engrossed in the commercial. So that's definitely, it sounded like Japanese, but I don't know Japanese. So it's not Japanese. So the people look Chinese. The character on the screen was Chinese, wasn't it? All right, well, we have to do some research here. But that's Chinese
The character in the corner could
that's Chinese. Been added. In fact, that says...
Yeah, but that could have just been
that's
added.
Yoku. That's the Chinese YouTube. That's where the confusion comes from.
That doesn't mean they're from China.
No. Right. But it is on the Chinese YouTube. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's see if we can see any... Let's do some research. Let's see if we can read the signs on the wall.
Well, look at you.
They're in English.
Oh.
That doesn't help.
That doesn't help at all. very interesting. So you think Korean for the makeup one? Definitely not Chinese for the watermelon one. Anyway, it's all they're Laotian. Big Ginge says they're Welsh. we don't know. Does it really matter? It doesn't matter.
It could be Gaelic.
Could be Gaelic. Yeah. There's a big Celtic Windows 8 fan base. So let's get some numbers from Paul Theron.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to remember where all of these came from, but I'm just going in descending order. Microsoft, sometime in the past couple of weeks or a week or so, said that there were 700 million active Microsoft accounts.
Yeah.
These are the former Windows Live IDs.
700 million. So these are Hotmail and Outlook users.
Yeah, Xbox Live, all this stuff.
Oh, includes Xbox, okay.
MSN, everything. 400 million Outlook.com accounts, including 300 million or plus that were transferred over from Hotmail.
Okay, that's a good number.
250 million SkyDrive users, which, by the way, I'd like to clarify in the sense that I've gotten a lot of people hear numbers like this, and they say, well, you know, that doesn't mean they're using it. I mean, how many people are actually using it? Everyone who has an Outlook.com account and basically everyone who has a Microsoft account has a SkyDrive account. These are like SkyDrive users.
By the way, to put this into context, Google's Gmail numbers a year ago were 425 million. So it's very, very close.
Yeah.
Very close.
250 million, the number of Windows Store apps downloaded in the first 6 months of availability.
Quarter of a billion would be a better way to say that.
There you go. I think that Julie Larson Green said the other day that... I'm not sure how relevant this is, and it's actually kind of hard to say what she meant, but that in the first 6 months of the App Store, that I don't know if she meant, I think she meant the number of apps available was greater than that were available in the Apple App Store in the first year. And I assume she means the iTunes, like the iPhone Store, not the Mac Store, but she didn't specify. I assume that's what she meant. 100 million, the number of Windows 8 licenses sold in the first 6 months.
6 months. Normally would be 120 million, right?
Well, we should talk about this one separately. Okay. Let's go back to that. We didn't talk about this last week, right?
Something
that happens.
This is new.
Yeah. Okay. So let's spend some time on that one. And then 40 million, which is the math there. So in other words, they had sold 60 million in the first quarter that Windows 8 was available. And then in the most recent quarter, they sold 40 million. So, yes, as you're alluding to, I've often said that, you know, over time, Windows 7 over its 3 years sold an average of 20 million copies. I should say 20 million licenses a month.
Very consistently.
Yeah, although actually it was not as consistently as maybe I've said, because actually after the first 6 months, it was 100 million, just like Windows 8 is today. I also looked it up, by the way. It took Windows Vista 15 months to sell 100 million copies. So significantly faster than Windows Vista. So the question is, I guess, whether Windows 8 sales are good or bad or indifferent, you know, after 6 months. And maybe that should be the broader discussion. Or not. It's up to you guys.
Open for discussion.
Yeah, I liked what you wrote about this, actually, because I think it so many people, when we got the 100 million number, said, so is that good or bad?
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to say, right? For a lot of reasons.
It is hard to say because it literally is. First of all, it's nuanced, right? The OS has been around for 6 months. You can make the comparison to Windows 7. Okay. The one thing I would point out that a lot of people kind of tend to forget, you know, when you talk about an average of 20 million a month and so forth, the first quarter of the year has got to be the low light for PC sales every single year. So That might actually explain part of it. It's a seasonal downturn. It's just the way it is. I mean, it's always that way. But the other thing is,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No.
Well, you know, it's just important to remember that Microsoft, in the days leading up to the release of Windows 8, and then for the first quarter and a little bit more, made available a very cheap way to upgrade to Windows 8 Pro electronically. I think it was it $39.99 or whatever. Very, very inexpensive. Right. And then in January, they went back to the normal pricing,
so
which
you'd
is
expect
really expensive.
Sales to fall off.
Yeah. So one of the things that had come out in their quarterly earnings, Microsoft's, this past quarter, was that the sales mix for Windows 8 returned to the historical norm, where most of the sales came from PC bundles, not from retail sales, which the previous quarter was not the case. Or I should say it was a little more nuanced, I guess. Because of that incredible upgrade offer that they had, that was temporary. So, I mean, you know, in some ways, it's very easy to say, well, they didn't hit the 20 million, and certainly I pointed to that as something we should watch for. But I think it's a little, I think, you know, in retrospect, after 6 months, it's a little unfair because 6 months just isn't enough time to make a comparison. And obviously, there are changes coming. We've got Windows 8.1 coming. We've got new hardware coming, smaller tablets, and everything. Potentially, you know, the thing that I've speculated about, this notion that maybe they will have that upgrade offer again for Windows 8.1 in the fall. And it's possible that when we look at Windows 8 after 1 year in the market, it might not be so bad. And so I think for myself anyway, I'm going to reserve judgment on it. I don't want to hop all over it as a complete disaster, but this is certainly where we're at.
Yeah. And Tammy Reller was the one who said very publicly, like, it's good, but we're not happy enough with it. Like, we think it's good, not good enough. So they aren't trying to tout this as like some amazing number. They're saying it's good. We're glad there's this much demand. And we think there'll be a lot more demand when the right hardware comes into market.
Yep. Oh,
starting
that's interesting.
Holiday.
They're blaming
if anything,
hardware.
That first quarter where they did hit that average should have been way higher than that.
Yeah.
You know, when you launch a new version of Windows, you have new, especially when you have new device types and all that kind of stuff, this is a prime opportunity for people to buy new hardware. And no one was doing it because what was in the stores was those $299 Dells with no touch capabilities whatsoever. And, you know, people see stuff like that and they think, I already have this computer. And, you know, why would I upgrade?
And by the way, if you compare it to Vista sales in the same period, it's significantly over Vista sales. Not that that's the gold benchmark. But
people love to make that comparison. You know, Windows 8 is the next Vista. And it's like, well, no, actually, as it turns out, not so much.
And you can't, I mean, you sell 100 million of anything. It's not really cause for, turn that frown upside down.
Not a bad number.
Not a bad number. Sure. I'd love to sell 100 million Framitzes or gizmos or gadgets or whatever. You mentioned it was a seasonal downturn. I had a seasoning upturn. I just want to thank truck driver Gary Glazer, who just sent me. He said, I'm from Cape Cod, round about your way, Paul, but I couldn't imagine you being without your Slap Your Mama Cajun seasoning from Ville Platte, Louisiana. So he sent me a couple of jars of that. I just wanted to thank him. Just wanted to interrupt your show and thank him for the spices.
Nice.
Okay. Anything else
there's
to say about this?
You're the best color commentator in the business, Leo.
It's exactly like that. You're watching a ball game, and guy starts talking about the motel that they're staying at. You know, it's exactly like that. Any more on those numbers? Anything else to say?
No.
A couple of notes that you don't have in here, but I might mention that Microsoft did ship just today an out-of-cycle patch for that Internet Explorer 8 exploit that we talked about yesterday on Security Now. So if you were still using 8, you might want to download that patch.
You might want to think about a few other things, too.
Yeah. It's not too late to get rid of 8.
You know, while you're upgrading, I mean.
Yeah, watermelon. This is an interesting story, and you had kind of thought, we had talked a lot about there being some sort of deal between Microsoft and Barnes & Noble, and what do we call it, the Wook? The Windows Nook. The Wook.
The fabled Wook, like Sasquatch. I don't think anyone's actually ever seen
it. It never happened. You know? But now the strong rumor, that Microsoft may be actually buying the Nook line. Is that right?
Yeah.
This is your story, right?
Yeah, well, not my story. Actually, this was TechCrunch late last night who said they had some internal Microsoft documents that showed Microsoft was considering buying out the Nook Media subsidiary. And the Nook Media thing was the thing Microsoft created with Barnes & Noble last year. They invested $300 million, and they created this thing that started out as NewCo, and then it became known as Nook Media. What it is where the Nook tablets reside, and also the Barnes & Noble e-catalog, like the digital catalog, and the college business that Barnes & Noble has. So that's all sits in this Nook Media division. So supposedly this is the thing that Microsoft is interested in buying for $1 billion. And what makes me think this rumor could be true is today the New York Times also cited an unnamed person saying, yeah, those are real documents. They're only a couple weeks old, and there could be a possible acquisition several weeks away.
Interesting.
I know.
I ignored this when I first heard about it because I thought it was so ludicrous. And actually, I think Mary Jo and I were talking earlier today, and she said, you know, these are actually recent. And I thought that it's got to be exploratory, but I'm still just kind of blown away that this is even a possibility.
They could just be doing due diligence. I mean, it doesn't mean it's happening.
No, but why would you even do due diligence on this? I mean,
Who would want this? Who would want it?
Right. So
it's a failed product.
We had this speculation about this kind of a Wook thing, you know, this notion that surely there will be at least one version of the Nook that is based on Windows RT or Windows 8 or whatever. Doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, they just announced that they're opening up their system to Google Play. So it's no longer that kind of Amazon Kindle-like pseudo environment. And Microsoft would buy this. Why? You know, it's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, we're going to buy something so we can shut it down. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, do remember.
To give Mary Jo some credit, unless you're about to say this.
All right. What? Go ahead.
She said to me, which means, of course, that it is happening.
that's how
Microsoft operates, you know.
Well, but also I'm thinking of Stephen Von Nichols' article that Microsoft's most profitable mobile operating system is Android. I mean, they're actually make a lot of money on Android, so maybe it's not a bad ecosystem for them.
Yeah, I mean,
they make money by licensing, right? I mean,
right,
it's not
right. And actually, the way that this whole venture started was Barnes & Noble and Microsoft were locked in a lawsuit over Android patents. And so they settled. And part of the settlement was, hey, we're creating this division and Microsoft's investing $300 million. But, you know, I've been asking around quite a bit about this. And I'm like, wow, does Microsoft want the Nook tablets or what do they want? They don't, supposedly, from people I'm talking to. They're way more interested in the college business.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear you say that it includes the college business.
Yep, it does.
That's a valuable part.
So what does that mean, though? What is the college business?
So textbooks. Textbooks and also some Barnes & Noble stores in colleges, in college bookstores. So think about this.
Is it electronic textbooks only or is it hardcover sales?
Digital. I believe it's digital. College business is digital and physical. And the physical part is the stores that Barnes & Noble operates on college campuses. So think about that. Like if Microsoft wanted to use that as a store, maybe, right, to sell the Surface, that would be interesting, right? Selling Surfaces at college.
I also think that electronic textbooks is going to be a big, big business if it's not already.
Yep. Yeah, for Barnes & Noble, this college business was kind of like the bright light in their last quarter earnings. That's the part everybody's really interested in. They have this thing called the Nook Study platform, which is this whole management, merchandising, and distribution of digital content, and that's what Microsoft's way interested in, supposedly. Not so much the Nook, but all this other part.
Yeah. Who wants the Nook? I mean, really, Kindle killed the Nook.
What man would want you now?
Although everybody I know who's seen the Nook for Windows 8 says the Nook app on Windows 8 puts the Kindle app to shame, everybody says.
Oh, that's interesting. And I don't think the Nook is a bad platform at all. It's all perception.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yep.
It would be so like Microsoft to buy it.
That's the
smartest thing I've heard about this.
It's exactly why they're doing it.
Doesn't make any sense. And she's like, that's exactly why they're going to do it.
Okay. Another reason I could see it somewhat making sense, because I was like, oh, wow, this seems like a crazy thing. But the more I think about it is, okay, who are they competing with the Surface? Like they're competing, obviously, with Apple and also with Amazon, with the Kindle, right? The one thing that Microsoft doesn't have that those two other platforms has is a bookstore and a digital magazine store. They don't have that as part of their platform. So you buy Nook, the Nook Media Division, you get that.
Oh, that's interesting.
It makes more sense the longer and deeper you think about it, if you just don't think about it as Microsoft buying the Nook.
I think the education. Sasquatch, right. The more you think about it, the more real it seems.
I just ask yourself, is it at least possible that Ad Asner was right about 9/11? Just ask yourself.
I do think that the education market is huge, and I think it's got to be huge for Microsoft, especially, university level.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes, just by itself, that makes a lot of sense.
It does.
And, Mary Jo has mentioned here in the notes that it's possible that this will be Amy Hood's first big acquisition and that she played a role in.
Who is Amy Hood?
Skype. She's the new CFO.
Oh, she just took the job as CFO.
Yep.
So that's interesting to me because one of the complaints about Skype is that Microsoft has effectively treated it like it's still its own company. It's Skype. It's not Microsoft Skype. It's not Microsoft announced today that Skype did something. Skype is kind of running its own little thing there. And Nook seems like another one of those businesses that it almost makes sense for it just to be its own thing. It just keep it going as its own thing.
I'm pretty sure that Barnes & Noble was about to kill the Nook.
Yeah.
And the hardware.
They were indicating that was likely.
And I think probably what happens, they went to Microsoft, said, look, we're gonna kill this off.
Sure.
You want to help us again?
You want the rest of us?
You want the rest of it? Because
thank you for showing your interest in Nook. How would you like to have the rest of Nook?
Basically, it's like a guy who's drowning, and he says to the guy, here, let me give you my watch, as he goes down.
Yeah.
So Microsoft, I mean, what are they going to do? Buy Barnes & Noble? No. So they took the...
Although they do have retail stores.
Yeah, but, they're distressed, I think.
Oh, for sure. Have you been in one of these things? They're also
you don't want those.
No one wants part of that.
I think they got the... I think, frankly, they picked over the bones and they got the good stuff and the rest of it. I mean, the Nook business was down... What was the number? It was huge.
Yeah, it was big.
Yeah.
And not a seasonal downturn.
No, it wasn't. Not a seasoning downturn either. Yeah. all right. And then the other story I heard, or I've been reading a lot about, is Marissa Meyer saying, I want to get out of this Bing thing.
This does not surprise me.
No.
Is it because she's a Googler?
Yeah, I think it is. Definitely think it is. Because, before she came... Yahoo seemed like they were kind of content to say, all right, we're outsourcing search to Microsoft. And
it's not a core business.
Core business. Right. But now she's back and it's like, hey, wait a second. Search is a core business. And can we get out of this contract?
Well, I might argue with her about that, but.
Yeah, I know. Me too. But
but for the first, 10 years of her working life, it was hammered into her. Google's search is it. It's the best. We're the best. We're number one. It's hard to get out of your head.
Well, I'm more to the point. At Google, search is a big business,
Right.
Yeah.
And so she comes from that background. Right. It's understandable.
Right. But it's also, isn't it an important advertising deal? Doesn't Microsoft make money off the advertising? Or Yahoo make
money? Yahoo does.
Yahoo, makes
I don't
money.
I don't know about Microsoft.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so where does that go?
Yeah. Yeah. So, when they announced the search partnership back in 2009, the deal was Microsoft gives the Bing search results to Yahoo, which Yahoo uses on its search properties for 10 years. And then Yahoo becomes the worldwide sales force for online ads for both companies.
And that's got to be billions.
Yeah. But because the advertising platform was going to be built on top of Microsoft's Ad Center, they knew that it was going to take some time for that to be kind of up and running and going at full tilt. So the part of the deal also included Microsoft doing this thing called revenue per search that they were paying to Yahoo, kind of helping them out as the platform took hold. But what happened with Ad Center was it never really took hold. Like it took hold a little bit more than it did at the beginning, obviously, but it never took off as much as it was expected to. So Microsoft's been paying Yahoo this quarterly payment. Here's the money. Here's the revenue per search, shortfall. And just this, I think it was just at the beginning of May, they renewed that again for another year. So it's almost like this is how Microsoft's locking them in and saying, you're sticking with us, guys. We're giving you this revenue per search thing and you're going to stick around, you know. Every story I read that talked about Yahoo trying to get out of the partnership with Microsoft, the two interesting parts were people were for some reason agreeing they probably could not get out of it until 2015 for some reason. And they also said the one that obviously, well, the one Yahoo's thinking about tying it up with is Google. And then there's all these different ways they could structure the deal so that it wouldn't be an antitrust threat. I know. I got to see that one first, but to believe that one.
Yeah. I don't see Microsoft. I mean, Google and Yahoo. That would be weird.
It would be weird. I don't think it would be. I think it would be more around the advertising platform. I would think, but I don't know. You know, I've just seen a lot of people kind of speculating how that could shake out.
Well, I mean, I guess if you say Yahoo's a content company and makes their revenue selling ads against content, why not partner with a search/advertising company and just work on focus on content?
Yep.
But that's a big, that's kind of a downsizing, a significant downsizing. I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the big question for us watching Microsoft is, okay, if this does unravel, then what happens to Bing?
Yeah, because it's 40% of Bing search or something.
Yeah. It's really big.
Yep. My thought here is you already kind of feel this when you talk to Microsoft about Bing. You know, it is obviously a web search engine and a mobile search engine, but more and more Microsoft's looking to the Bing division to leverage other kinds of things. So they're taking like a lot of the APIs from Bing and data sets from Bing, and they're selling that now to third parties. And I think that's kind of where they're going with Bing, more like it's a piece of their whole ecosystem as opposed to it's just a search engine. And I think they're going to keep Bing. There was talk about a year ago that Microsoft was talking to people about selling Bing, but I think that's over. I think they intend to keep Bing around, and they're just going to probably try to leverage the things that they get out of Bing, big data, machine learning, all these things that are kind of like more platform stuff,
right,
and make use of it that way. That's my guess.
What about Facebook? I mean, Bing has a relationship with Facebook now. Maybe in place of Yahoo, Facebook takes a bigger role.
That's an interesting one.
Because Facebook is an interesting play on search. You know, it's social.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. I'm a little nervous about Facebook and Microsoft, though. It seemed like Microsoft used to have a kind of a privileged relationship with Facebook. And it seems like Facebook has suddenly realized it's a little more important than it used to be. And it doesn't really have to
need Microsoft.
Do what Microsoft says it should do.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see. But I mean, obviously, Facebook is under a lot of pressure to show strong financial results, especially from ads and so forth. And, you know, if Bing isn't working out for Yahoo, it's conceivable that Bing isn't working out for Facebook either.
Wow.
But I like that idea, Leo. I think, you know, that's kind of Microsoft's calling card in a way. Like if the Yahoo thing falls apart, they try to do something more with Facebook, maybe.
Well, in a way, and also the other thing is search is kind of over. Traditional index the web search.
Yeah, right.
Is, it's starting to look long in the tooth. Social search is starting to look stronger.
And search apps also. Like search is inside of apps now, right?
Right. And phones. It's inside of phones.
Right.
But it's inside of phones in an interesting way. I mean, I really think Siri is the pointing the way to, and Google's doing it too with Now and so forth. It's pointing the way towards the future of search in mobile. It's not what you're used to going to a web page, typing in a search term, and finding some other pages. Right. It's saying, book me lunch
for
two.
Well, people expect answers now. In other words,
they want answers.
No one is impressed that you have 3.1 million results.
Right.
What I want is the answer to the damn question I just asked. You know, like that, and people have that expectation. Now.
Right. And they may want answers in some cases that are massaged by location, by social graph. I mean, it's so much more than it used to be.
Yep. So maybe calling Bing the decision engine wasn't as dumb as we all laughed about.
No, I think they understood where it was headed. Absolutely. Yeah. They've got some really smart guys in there.
They do.
Is it Chi Lu?
Absolutely.
Chi Lu.
Yeah, very smart guys in there. Yep. I think they were looking at this, and I think that's why you saw a deal with Facebook. They were really... Before Google Plus, they were really starting to incorporate social graph into Bing. And I think that was probably what precipitated Google Plus.
Although, for whatever it's worth, I, I, I have to say on both ends of that, I don't like the social stuff integrated into Bing, personally.
Because you're really a misanthrope.
Old, yeah.
And, no, you just don't like people.
But I also, you know,
you're putting people in my research results.
Well, no, remember Facebook recently announced that they were going, or, and have now probably rolled out some kind of an upgrade to the timeline or whatever it was, and that you could have these kind of, I'm sorry, to the search experience in Facebook, and that you would search for stuff and it would search across your people.
Right.
So you could look for photos and,
right.
you know, yeah.
Yeah, they've
but
really
there was this kind of weird fallback thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because if you search for something that didn't have relevance inside your little social groups in Facebook,
right.
they would show you what looked like, you know, browser search results just for the wider web. And it's like that also has no place,
right?
You know, inside of Facebook. Like that kind of thing in Facebook kind of stinks too.
Yeah, you know, I think browser search results kind of have to go.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm looking at the suggested searches on my timeline. It's photos of my friends, restaurants nearby, games my friends play, music my friends like.
Right.
It's all of that.
So those things are okay, right? But in other words, like, you know, maybe there's a favorite group that you have that's going to be playing locally or something, and you want to see if anyone has seen that group or posted something.
Right.
And you search for that, and no one has. And so what comes up is, you know, web search results. And in the context of Facebook, that's actually not a very desirable thing to display. It would almost be better just to say, your friends have not discussed this, you know, then show that kind of stuff. It's almost not helpful.
Yeah, that's a good point. You don't want search results. But I think that's what we're saying is search is not...
Right.
It's
right.
less and less important.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sit on Paul's shot and...
I was just reflecting on the fact that... by the way, I've spent the last 10 days out in the sun every day.
You look good.
Thanks.
You're tanned, rested.
I am still not as colorful as Mary Jo Fuller. And you know, I don't know what else I can do.
It's the mystery of the webcam.
I've literally
been
in the sun.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we could probably assume that Mary Jo has actually not seen the sun in years. So
I have not.
But look at her. She's like vibrant.
I know.
I'm glowing.
She's glowing. It's good genes, Paul. Nothing you can do about it.
It's all that beer.
Might be beer. Might be beer.
Okay, there's another avenue to try.
Xbox Next. March, what is it? May 21st. We're getting there. May 21st.
This is just rumor stuff.
Okay, that's fine.
Well, a lot of this is Nokia rumor stuff, too, I guess. I don't know why.
This week in Microsoft rumors.
This is, you know, again, not
real.
Not verified.
Not real. Not real. But
so I'm intrigued. Mary Jo threw one in here.
Mary Jo has an Xbox rumor?
Everyone wake up. I have an Xbox
rumor. What the hell?
But let Paul do his first.
All right.
Okay. So my Xbox rumors are that Durango, meaning the next Xbox, will have a 500 gigabyte hard drive.
Okay. That's a good size. That's good.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, I want to say the current... I should just do it. I guess I could look it up.
200, 250.
We have internet. I'll look it up. I thought it was 200. Maybe
there's a 250, I think, and of course, when I'm without a hard drive.
Yep, 4 gigabyte kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So 500 makes
it's
sense.
Good. You know, it's twice as good.
HD device, why not? Okay. The other one is that the logo will be changed. You know, you might have seen a couple weeks ago there was a purported new Xbox logo that made the rounds, which based on this is not the case. This is just a minor tweaking of the logo, not a major logo change.
I don't think you want to change the logo too much.
Well, you know, Microsoft is in the middle of that rebranding.
Yeah, that's
thing.
True, yeah.
And, it seems like the Xbox logo, at least the one we have now, has been around since the 360. It's been around, that's a long time.
So, let's see here if this is this the Xbox Infinity confirmed as Microsoft's new console? Does that tie into it?
Yeah, except
that
Xbox.
International Business Times.
What?
And
really?
Then that's the new logo with a little infinity thing.
That's fake.
That's fake.
I think that's fake, too.
Oh, it was leaked on, get ready for this, Reddit.
Yeah, it's fake.
Yeah.
Nice. International Business Times reports.
Yikes.
Sources at Reddit tell us.
Oh. Sources at Reddit.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, I mean, the current Xbox logo dates back to the Xbox 360 launch. There's a flatter version of it that has appeared in recent days because a lot of the new logos are flat. But supposedly the logo is changing for the next Xbox. There was one that looked like two Band-Aids crossing each other.
Is it really?
I'm going to
they don't literally
open up a can of whoop-ass on you,
the shape
Xbox.
Of Band-Aids, you know.
Yeah.
But the name is going to be Xbox, right?
This is from Jeff Gerstmann's Giant Bomb. I would trust him a little bit more. There's the two Band-Aids.
Well, that's the, I don't think that's...
That looks ugly, too.
Yeah, that's not it.
Yeah.
It's not it.
That's not.
Nah.
That's a lie!
Well, right, yeah,
so
we'll know
Mary
pretty soon.
Xbox rumor?
Yeah. My Xbox rumor is about this never-ending, always-on controversy.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my sources, who I trust, told me, you know what this is, actually? Always on means always on, always connected, just like connected standby. And in a way, this rumor makes sense because if you think about it, we know the next Xbox is based on Windows, right? Windows has connected standby. So if this is true, what all this controversy about it's always on could just mean the device will go into a low power state but not be off.
You got support on hardware.
By the way,
I want
what you said to be true. I think connected standby is true. The only thing I would say is that back in January, the information that I had gotten literally said must be internet connected to use.
Yeah.
So the thing that I received specified internet connected, not just connected.
I'm just throwing it into the rumor pile to stay awake here on the Xbox site.
I like
something
it.
For Mary Jo to do.
Yes.
So also some Nokia rumors, I guess, that there will be a 6-inch phablet coming out in the fall. That the big announcement next week at the event they're having will be a replacement for the Lumia 920, so a new hero phone.
The 928.
This will be the catwalk phone that people have heard of, sort of a thinner version of the 920.
That's the aluminum phone.
Yeah,
right?
I like that. I want that. Yeah.
And also that there'll be two more high-end Nokia phones coming this year. And actually, I should have looked, but I'd gotten kind of a vague diagram of the Nokia phone schedule for this year, and there were some, you know, kind of fuzzy looking phones there in the middle of the year. But this says that one is a full pure view camera with a 41 megapixel camera.
Yeah,
that will come out late in the summer and be similar to that pure view 808 that they had last year,
right? Which wasn't even running; it was like running an old version of Symbian.
Yep. So we shall see.
Yeah.
I haven't confirmed any of this.
Good rumor. And are they going to call the tablet the Lumia? And will it be Windows RT? What will the tablet be?
No idea.
Windows Phone?
No idea. If next week comes and goes and they don't announce a tablet, that's going to be very disappointing.
Nokia.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why will you be disappointed?
Because personally? They're having this huge announcement. And they don't mention it then. And that, I mean, so why, you know, like what are you waiting for? You know, I mean, I suppose Build would be another spot to do it. But it seems like if enough time goes by, either they're not doing it or it's way later in the year.
How important is this, though? Well, why is it an important product?
Tablet?
Yeah.
Because Nokia is a company that needs to differentiate a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just today, for example, they announced an Asha phone that a lot of people are describing as kind of a middle ground between feature phones and smartphones, and they're suggesting that somehow they're hedging in their strategy and this is some new direction for them. I actually feel that Asha has always filled that spot, and I don't understand that this is any big difference. But when you look at the low volume of Lumia sales compared to the previous generation stuff that they had, it does occur to me that they need to do more stuff, you know? And I don't want to see them go Android, but I think that they need to differentiate it, or I should say,
can you make a low-priced Windows 8 phone?
Yeah, they're shipping one right now. So the Lumia 520 and the variants of the 520, like the 521 that's being sold in the United States, $150, no contract, and you just buy it outright.
Oh, so that's the actual phone price. Wow.
Yeah, it's a decent phone. It's a really decent phone. It's not a super low end piece of junk. It's actually it's pretty much up there with, you know, any mid level phone, I guess I would say.
And I think it goes without saying, but this is probably mostly for the less developed world rather than the U.S. market.
Yeah, I mean the primary focus here, yes, is this is one of those quantity over quality type things, I suppose. Although, like I said, I mean, this is a decent phone, but yeah, China, there is obviously a big concern. A lot of the emerging markets. But I actually feel like there's a place for this kind of phone in the U.S. market. You know, that the real cost of a phone, a decent phone, is, you know, typically $500, $600, $700. I mean, yeah. Very, very expensive. And we don't really sort of understand that that's the cost, because we pay these subsidized prices.
I just paid $800 for a Galaxy S4.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Unlocked 16 gigabytes of memory. Grumble.
Yeah.
But it has 8 cores.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
There's also the new Huawei. Is that how you pronounce it?
Huawei.
Huawei phone that was announced today coming to the U.S. It's coming to Walmart.
$129.99.
It's like, wow, okay.
How much is that going to cost, did they say?
No, we don't know the price yet.
Huh. Okay. Cheap.
Yep.
And it's a Windows phone.
Yep. Off contract, Windows Phone 8 in Walmart and Walmart.com.
I think somebody said $129.99.
Did they? Okay. On their press release, they just said pricing coming later, but that may be out.
Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, I don't see it.
So, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I feel like it's almost like Microsoft and partners going back to their roots with all these cheaper Windows phones. Because when you remember Microsoft in the old days, they always talked about being the high volume, low cost company. And it's like they kind of lost that with consumer devices for a bit. And now it feels like that is coming back again.
Yeah.
Nokia obviously has had some mid-level phones, but for the most part, their strategy has been the high end of the market, you know. Mm-hmm. They've always had these big flagship devices, you know, the 900, 920 now. Yep. A lot of the mid-level and lower-end phones that they're putting out, like the 620, the 520 now, and the 720, which I've not seen yet, to me are in many ways more interesting, especially if they can have decent cameras and so forth and be very inexpensive and be a tremendous value. They have removable shells. You can do different colors. You can do wireless charging and so forth. I mean, there's some really neat capabilities in there. And I do think this is a good place for them to be in.
Well, and it's where the growth area is, because now more than half, at least in the U.S., more than half of Americans have smartphones. So presumably those who don't are holding out for inexpensive.
Well, and here's another thing. And so I have, you know, we have, you know, obviously I have a wife and I've got 2 kids and everything. And we're at the point now where almost everyone in the family has a phone.
Even little kids, yeah. You're not going to pay $700 for a phone for an 8-year-old.
No, but what we would consider doing, my daughter is 11, so if you could buy a phone for $150 and own it outright, and then pay an as-you-go type plan through like a T-Mobile where it's, I think they have something that starts at $30 a month.
They have a $30 100-minute talking and unlimited text.
Not that $30 a month is not a significant amount of money, but it's the type of thing where it's not tied to a 2-year contract. Right. You don't pay anything for getting out of it. You can cancel it at any time. That is really compelling compared with the way the smartphone industry has been, you know, for the past several years. So even in a country like the United States, it's not just...
No, there's a market.
It's not just emerging markets.
But you have to do something to tap that market, because they're not buying iPhones and they're not buying Lumias.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, there's something there, though. I think the kid market's a huge market.
Yep.
If you're in fourth grade or later, having a phone is not a luxury convenience item. It's or a status symbol. It's a convenience item.
Actually, we run into this weird stuff with my son where he'll get some kind of progress report at school where he's not doing well, and my wife will take away his phone, and then we can't reach him. You know, like he's at a school.
It's a bad punishment.
She can't touch him, or can't text him, rather.
It's a bad punishment.
Who did we punish again?
No, I learned that too. You cannot take away the phone. That's not what you take away.
Yeah.
Take away the Xbox.
All right,
we're going to take a break. I'm not going to take away Paul and Mary Jo just yet, frankly, because we've got picks of the week and code name and beer. I like this beer, as always. Our show today brought to you by those good folks at the Directory Wizards, derwiz.com/windows. If you're managing a business where you have multiple directories, you need a unified gal. You want to create a messaging forest. Link seamlessly with HR databases, or perhaps you want to build a backup forest to aid in disaster recovery. I see guys with pickaxes and little redwood seedlings, but apparently that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about UnitySync, a synchronization solution that will truly create a unified global address list. over Open LDAP, Active Directory, Oracle, Novell, Lotus Notes, Lotus Domino, GroupWise, multiple SQL and ODBC databases, text formats. Unity Sync can scale from small directories with hundreds of objects to literally hundreds of thousands of addresses without requiring extensive training or installation or configuration time. I want you to go, if you're in the business and you know what this all is about and you understand why you need this, I want you to go to derwiz.com/windows. And we've got an evaluation you can actually download and install for free and put into action before the end of the day today. You'll be saying, wow, look, it's all unified. It's a gal. I got my gal. So try it today. The web-based interface, very intuitive and friendly. You don't have to program or script. There's no additional database. It's entirely self-contained. And if you look at the people who use Unity Sync, you get a very good idea of the capabilities of this thing. The Canadian Air Force uses it. The U.S. Department of Defense uses it. NATO uses it. The NFL, the Green Bay Packers use it, ladies and gentlemen, as do the Seahawks, the Texans, and the Falcons, and the Lions. You can see, if you've got a big database with lots of objects in there, this is a great solution. U.S. Army Force Com, U.S. Marine Corps, the United States Department of Agriculture, the University of Maryland at Baltimore. I can go on and on. What I want you to do is go to derwiz.com/windows and find out more. Get that free evaluation. I mean, this is a really amazing product. Unity Sync. Try it today. derwiz.com/windows. And now back to our guy and gal, Paul and Mary Jo, and time for Paul's tip of the week.
So last week, Microsoft added a couple of new features. I'm trying to scroll this thing down. It doesn't scroll anymore. Never mind.
You must be using Windows 8.
I am using Windows
8. So I'm complaining.
I don't know
the other
why
day.
I'm touching the screen. It's not doing
I'm
anything.
I'm bitching and moaning because I can no longer point at the screen. I reinstall. I said, let's reinstall. I don't know what's going on. Somebody in the chat room says, maybe you pressed the function key that disables your trackpad. I said, what? Oh. Why, yes, I did.
Embarrassing.
Oh, that is embarrassing. Ow! That's anyway, I'm sorry. I share your pain. That's all I'm saying.
My pain is unrelated to Windows 8. But anyway, last week Microsoft added a couple of new features to Outlook.com, and one of them is a long-awaited feature, although as I've now learned, having done it, that it's not quite exactly the way I want it. But they've added the ability to send, or I should say they've improved the ability to send email from another email account. So in other words, you can consolidate all of your email through Outlook.com, so all of your email comes into Outlook.com, and then you can send email from Outlook.com, using Outlook.com from multiple email accounts. And so, consolidate Gmail, Yahoo Mail, your old Hotmail account, use your Outlook.com account, and then from a pull-down, choose where new email comes from. Unfortunately...
So that's like no more on behalf of.
Right.
Yeah.
So the way that it works now in Outlook.com is they still support the on behalf of system that they had before, and now they have this new system where you can just send email. You know, it just looks like it is coming from that email account because it really is. They're using the SMTP server from the other account. The problem is I recommend otherwise that you forward mail from other accounts to Outlook.com because it's immediate and it works better. And then if you collect email from your other accounts using Outlook.com, there's no way to configure how often it happens. And some people have noted that it appears not to be consistent, that email will come into one of the other accounts. You don't see it immediately. It doesn't work as well. Unfortunately, if you use this new method for sending email from another account, you have to use the collection method of aggregating accounts, not the forwarding method. So you kind of lose out. It's kind of a mixed blessing. And so you have your choice of seamless email aggregation, but having to use on behalf of, or you can collect your email from Outlook.com. It may not always be immediate, but you can send mail from those other accounts in a way that does not have on behalf of, if that makes sense. So yeah. Anyway, I've written an article about it. It's on the Super Safe Windows. You can check out how to configure that. So it's good to know. It's not, it's again, when I wrote the article, I thought it was perfect. And then I started getting double copies of all my email.
Oh, no.
It doesn't, you can't forward and collect. And that's too bad.
You cannot forward and collect.
And if you don't know what that means, don't worry your pretty little head. It's not important. It's pretty complicated.
It's
so,
just you can't push and pull at the same time.
There you go. Oh, you understand exactly.
Like a push me, pull you.
Well, actually, you can push and pull. It's just that you get two copies.
You get two copies. One pushed, one pulled.
I didn't think that was going to happen that way. Software pick of the week. Again, I have multiple picks. I don't remember if it was last week or the week before when I did this, but we are in the middle of an amazing period of time for Windows Phone for whatever reason, where all of a sudden, for all of the complaining about apps, we are getting amazing apps on Windows Phone. And this past week, we've gotten Hulu Plus, Foursquare, Pinterest, and an official YouTube app for Windows Phone made by Microsoft.
Wait a minute.
Oddly enough.
Wait a minute. Pinterest?
Yep.
Mary Jo, would you set him straight?
Pinterest?
Yeah.
Pinterest.
Right. I'm like, well, what did he just say?
Pinterest. Yeah.
I thought it was a special blog on the phone.
Well, I don't actually use the feature.
No, that's good, Paul. You're showing your masculinity.
That Pinteresting that all the girls is using.
Pinterest.
So anyway, and also a game called Monster Burner, which I only mentioned because it's free and it's kind of a cool little kind of a fun
I like the idea of burning monsters. Can't knock that.
The other thing I've added to the notes after you looked at it probably is that I think just today the Windows Phone 7.0 update for the Lumia 900 has come out.
Ooh.
And so actually as the show has been going on, I've been downloading it and installing it. It's not done yet, but this adds a bunch of the Windows Phone 8 UI features to Windows Phone 7. For example, the ability to have multiple tile sizes, you know, not just the fixed, you know, set of sizes that were built into the OS. And also, you know, more theme colors. And it adds the ability to have the Bing image of the day as your lock screen.
Well, that's nice. I really like the Bing image of the day. That's nice.
Yeah. So if you have a Windows Phone, well, I should say, if you have a Lumia 900, on AT&T, which I think is the only place you can get it in the United States anyway, that update is available again. They had put out 7.8 some months ago, and they had to pull it because there was some kind of a problem. They fixed that problem. That fixes part of the update now. And it's one of those great Zune deals. You plug it in, and you download multiple updates, and it reboots 100 times, and it takes a long time.
You know, great.
In case you were wondering why they changed things in Windows Phone 8. But something to definitely get it. If you have a Lumia 900, you're going to want to pick that one up, too.
Well worth the upgrade.
Definitely.
Enterprise pick of the week from Ms. Mary Jo Foley.
Yes, my enterprise pick of the week is Office Web Apps, which people may recall are the web, I always call them the webified versions of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote. And these have been around since 2010. But Microsoft this week shared some information about what's coming over the next few months and beyond, as they said in their blog post. They talked about adding official support for Chrome on Android for Office web apps on Android tablets.
Ooh. Oh, tablets. Oh.
Yeah. But that's good. You know, right now they support a lot of different browsers and a lot of different operating systems, but the support for Chrome on Android tablets was not official, and some people said they got it to work and it was kind of hit or miss. So that's one thing that's definitely coming. The other big thing they said is they're going to be adding support for what they call real-time simultaneously editing. And I know Paul and I will appreciate this when it comes to the OneNote app.
That's for sure.
Because when two people are trying to collaborate on one OneNote web app document, it's always like we're writing over each other, or like I see something sync and then I take something out of the notes and then Paul adds it in the place of it.
Sometimes it literally kills it. Like it can't.
It does. Right. Wow. It can't sync. Yeah. So
That's probably where I'm getting that can't sync error, actually.
Yeah. It's more like if you're collaborating on the document that you might get this, but they said they're going to start with PowerPoint web app. And then they're going to bring it to the other web apps.
OneNote's
the
first place they should bring it. That's where
I know. I'm surprised. I was like, PowerPoint? Huh.
Yeah.
But these things are coming. And I've heard this is the whole, you know, when we talked about Gemini before, which is the whole new wave of Office stuff starting with Blue for Office. This is going to also include some things for Office web apps. So at the same time as you see them updating the native versions of Office, you'll see them also updating the Office web apps with different new capabilities as part of the Gemini waves. So very interesting. They're starting to talk publicly about what's coming.
And to use this, do you have to have an Office 365 or a subscription?
Nope.
No.
You don't even have to have Office on your machine.
It's free.
Like when I use the OneNote web app, I don't have OneNote on this PC. So I can still just use it as
That's
if
nice.
I did because it's opening in the browser.
You do have to be logged into your Microsoft account, obviously. But
I do.
That's cool. Very nice. And let's have some beer. What do you say?
Do you want to do the code name first?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Code name first.
The code name is...
Beer is for dessert.
Interesting. Beer is our dessert, yep. Literally, today.
Yep.
Code name of the week is this thing called GenDocs. G-E-N-D-O-X. And what it is right now is it's the internal tech document publishing system that Microsoft uses. So when they're creating their own tech documentation, this is the system they use to publish it out to their different sites, like MSDN and other places. But I'm getting a tip from one of my good sources that GenDocs could actually be coming to, it may come to Office itself and or Office web apps. And what that would mean would be GenDocs would help Microsoft have more of like of a publishing, authoring, and collaboration platform. Like this would be the way that you as a user could say start something in Word web app and then publish it out to maybe the web or to another app. And I'm wondering with what we heard this week with Barnes and Noble and the Nook Media rumor, if this might not somehow play in there, because Barnes and Noble has this Nook Study platform right now, and this maybe could be a way that Microsoft allows people to kind of create new textbooks or college documentation or college notes, and you could update it, collaborate inside the document. I don't know. I'm just guessing on that part, but GenDocs is something to listen for as we start going forward with Office.
Excellent. GenDocs.
GenDocs.
And now it's time for GORP.
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 Yep.
GORP.
Beer pick of the week is from a brewery here in New Jersey area called Carton Brewing. And they have this really awesome beer I tried last week called GORP. GORP is good old raisins and peanuts.
Is that what GORP stands for, really?
I don't know. Like, that's what they say.
When you have trail mix, it's
yeah,
I never knew
yeah.
that.
So this beer, it's a porter, and it really does taste like peanuts and raisins, like in a really good way. It tastes delicious.
Sounds
Are you sure that there is a way that could taste good?
Sure. Haven't you had GORP?
Yeah, it does.
Hey,
it tastes, you know when you have trail mix and it has like all
salty
the raisins
and sweet.
In the yep.
They go together.
That's what this tastes like. Yeah, so I picked it because everyone's always joking about all the tech acronyms we have, but I'm like, yeah, beer has some acronyms too. Like,
porters are always like, you know, they got chocolate porters, and this is a nice, big, rich, thick, heady brew.
Exactly. Next time you're out on the East Coast, you might find it out here.
From the Carton Brewing Company, New Jersey, New Jersey. Ms. Mary Jo Foley can be found at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's the place to go if you want to read all about Microsoft on the ZDNet blogs. Paul Thurrott is the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. His books are legion. Most recently, Windows 8 Secrets and the new windowsphonebook.com, where you can read the book in process. And I think that's everything that I need to say. I thank you, too.
I need to start thinking about the next book, Leo.
Windows Blue Secrets.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe.
There'll be a market.
Maybe.
May not be much to say, but there'll be a market.
All right, three chapters.
Yeah.
36 pages.
Yeah. It's blue. It's new. Paul and Mary Jo join us to do this show live every Thursday morning, 11 a.m. Pacific, afternoon on the East Coast, 2 p.m. Around the world, 1800 UTC. You can watch live. And if you can't, don't worry. On-demand audio and video will be made available upon request at twit.tv/windows. Or subscribe and get a copy downloaded automatically to your Diamond Rio MP3 player.
Those were the days.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Peacock. Peacock. Peacock.
You know, I was worried the people that wore Google glasses were going to look stupid.
You know, it's so funny. Yes, please. It looks good, doesn't it? This is fake. Patrick Delahanty made this with goods, with stuff lying around the house. Oh, I can't take it off
now,
Patrick.
That's how Google made it, too. So.
Yeah, that's how Google did it. Very good. Very perfectly done. Thank you, Patrick. Peacock.